This is Conquering Columbus.
Hey, everybody. It's Andy here, and you're listening to the Conquering Columbus podcast. This is episode 378 of the show, and on this interview, Mike and Josh spoke with Bob Suter, co-founder and head of operations at Wolf's Ridge Brewing. Wolf's Ridge is celebrating their 10-year anniversary of the business, and during the interview, Bob talks about the story behind Wolf's Ridge, how things have changed over the past 10 years, and what the future holds in store for their team. Early on, Mike asked Bob what it's like working in a family-operated business and how they handle the challenges of working with family.
I think that's the important thing is that we both had a lot of passion behind what we were doing. So we voiced that. That conflict is really important, you know, and as we've grown as an organization, sometimes, you know, we try to find ways in which we can really push that in. So we have a leadership team now and we have these meetings and it's like, speak up. You know, if you say this is stupid or this is a bad idea, tell me. And we, you know, my dad and I are still, you know, actively involved and we have that engagement. So I think showing them that, hey, it's okay to disagree. Yep. We still love each other. You know, that's a really important piece.
Later, Bob spoke about why they decided to choose an initial location in the heart of Columbus rather than in a suburb like many of the early breweries seen up to that point.
The why in Columbus for me felt like we didn't have what was going on in Chicago. And you saw that, you know, it was right in front of me all the time. And it's like, man, this would do well. This is a great city here. We have a really, you know, eclectic group of people. There's a ton of diversity around the city. Like we can do something that is a little bit beyond what was typical around 2013. So talk about like brunch wasn't a thing. It was a huge thing in Chicago. Now it's, I mean, it's big everywhere, which is great, but nobody was doing brunch when we opened. And we saw that as an opportunity to really pair more elevated food and elevated experience with beer, which was kind of anti to the traditional brew pub model at the time. So that for us was the opportunity. And then, you know, alongside the food component, just really trying to develop some world-class beer here in Columbus.
As the show wraps up, Bob gave some advice for the listeners centered around one theme, reframing your perspective.
One thing that I've learned, especially over the past few years, is that perspective is huge. You know, the barrier that gets in the way of us doing most of the things that we want to be doing. And I think if you can really work on exercising that reframing of the things that are kind of getting in the way of you doing something that gets you excited, it's going to be really beneficial.
As usual, we just want to say thanks so much for tuning into the show. If you like what you're hearing and want to help support Conquering Columbus, be sure to hit that subscribe button on whatever podcast app you're listening on. All right, that's it for me. Let's get on with the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Conquering Columbus podcast. I'm your co-host, Mike. We've got Josh here in the booth as well, and he's got a big old ice pack on his shin because he keeps breaking it running on treadmills. So also, always, per usual, we're going to start with our nice awkward introduction. Josh?
I think I'm going to change the introduction. I want to start talking about business ideas that I'm thinking about that day.
That's a good introduction.
That I don't have
the
time
business idea for today?
To pursue myself. So I like working out with friends. But there's no app out there that lets you do it in like real time, right? Like
you've been on this one for a while.
I guess you could just FaceTime your group of friends and all like work out together. But I want to be like hooked into the application we're on, feeling like
competing.
We're in the same room, competing maybe, but like seeing each other's scores and just kind of like in it together, you know?
So basically like you're able to do CrossFit, but like in separate places.
Yeah, and you don't have to throw a bar over underneath your head, you know, you just like...
Or ride a bike or
jump
do
on a bike,
like,
yeah,
you know, just, you know, work out together.
Yeah. Is that a stupid idea? Would anybody else see? I get a lot of ideas that I think are great, and then I ask other people and they are
the
very
The coordination
stupid.
Of that is difficult.
Can I answer?
Well, yeah, sure. Jump on in, our mystery guest.
I would say that it's a great idea. I think that there's a community around that, which is obviously something that is hard to find these days, and it allows you to connect in that way, and you can talk about it later, and anything that allows to support that community connection, I think makes a lot of sense.
It's kind of like words with friends, but workout with friends.
That was your verbal commit for the seed round. So just give you a heads up on that.
You'll get very little from it.
Makes sense.
Not because I don't think it's a bad idea.
The community piece is what gets me, right? It's like it's so hard as an adult. We normally don't side tangent the intro this long, but to find like a deep level of community at CrossFit, I think is why it was so successful. But like you have this strong group of friends in college, they move away and it's like, you know, how do you bring those relationships back together? So that was kind of the idea.
Most people
it.
Play video games with their friends. That's like the thing, you know?
Yeah, well, that's not going to do it for me. So
right. So you need, yeah, it makes sense. Okay. Well, we're done talking about workout apps. If you'd like to invest, reach out to Josh. I'm sure you can find his email somewhere.
We're going
to
start at a $50 million valuation.
Yeah. And, but our mystery guest who has jumped in already is Bob Suter. And Bob is a co-founder and head of operations at Wolf's Ridge Brewing. And it was established in 2013 by Bob and his father, Alan, with a passion for brewing, right? Really big focus on, they just wanted to do some brewing. And so they got us going. Well, we'll learn more about that today. They also have a sister location today, Understory, that's located in Clintonville. So we'll be talking about how Wolf's Ridge got its start, what's changed over the past 10 years. They're coming up on their 10-year anniversary here in September, and where they plan to go in the future. Welcome to Conquering Columbus, Bob.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah. So the first thought that I had when I was kind of looking into you guys and preparing for this one was working with my dad. I don't know if I could do that. So I'm going to start there, just kind of throw the like little wrench in the script here and say, like, was that ever like a, hey, is this going to work? Or was it, you were just like all in, like, was it just always kind of like, yeah, this is just what we're going to do?
Yeah, it definitely started out with a lot of excitement and energy. And then the realities of making decisions with your dad and my mom, she was very heavily involved early on. That was a shift. You know, I didn't expect that coming out of it, but we both had kind of our separate areas where we were focused on. He was really involved in getting the brewery up and running. I was involved in getting the restaurant up and running. Mm-hmm. That's where my passion lied. His lied there in the beer. So it fell in line pretty easily along those, that bisection there of responsibilities. But, you know, there was a point at which my mom said some mean words to me when we were having a contentious argument. And I was like, oh, wow, this is real. Yeah. We're doing it.
Yeah. But like, that's another thing that I think anybody who's really poured a lot of their life into something understands, which is that when you're pouring your life into something, put a lot of effort into something, sometimes it's going to get a little contentious.
It will. You're absolutely right. I think that's the important thing, is that we both had a lot of passion behind what we were doing. So we voiced that. That conflict is really important, you know, and as we've grown as an organization, sometimes, you know, we try to find ways in which we can really push that in. So we have a leadership team now and we have these meetings and it's like, speak up. You know, if you say this is stupid or this is a bad idea, tell me. And we, you know, my dad and I are still, you know, actively involved and we have that engagement. So I think showing them that, hey, it's okay to disagree. We still love each other. You know, that's a really important piece.
Makes sense. Well, I'm going to back it up now. I've already taken this off script, but we'll back it up. And just for our listeners, can you give us a little background on yourself and kind of life up to the point at which you guys decided to start Wolf's Ridge?
Sure. So back to the beginning, I was born in Cleveland, grew up just outside of Columbus here in Dublin. Went to Ohio State, met my future wife there. We moved to Chicago. We were there for about 5 years. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I had explored a lot in hospitality. I'd worked at a hotel during college, so I really fell in love with that side of things. But the food scene out there was fantastic. The beer scene, everything was great. So really fell in love with food and drink out there and got more excited about potentially doing something. Worked in a couple finance-related roles. I studied finance in college. Kind of knew that that wasn't what I wanted to do long-term. Mm-hmm. And seeing my dad go through a similar struggle throughout his life, knew that if I can pursue something that I can do on my own, I really want to do that. And was really looking for ideas back then. And he got to a point where he had been at IBM for 35 years. He worked a long time there. Said he needed to work for another 10 years before he could retire. I'm just going to try this. And he, you know, started getting excited about it and figured that it needed a restaurant retail component to help not only with the brand, you know, awareness, recognition, but also cash flow. It's a good business model. Mm-hmm. He came to me and said, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. And took my wife about a month after that conversation to say, hey, are we going to do this? And, you know, after that, it was full steam ahead.
So you studied finance, went to Chicago to work in some areas of finance. Were you working in elements of it that were, you know, private equity and understanding, you know, how to finance a business like this and getting the kind of look behind the curtains?
I wish I had been that close. It was somewhat adjacent for my first role. It was an investor relations consultancy. So I would represent the public companies that would need investor relations. So I would be the one that might connect with analysts, investors mm-hmm. to talk about the company. But that's as close as I got to really understanding. And obviously that's more focused on the stock equity component right. of finance and not so much the private equity piece. Mm-hmm.
Wolf's Ridge isn't going public anytime soon?
No, we're not. The other role was supporting a pharmaceutical company in hardware sales. So mm-hmm. I would analyze deals, make sure they were profitable and do leases and things like that. So that was actually more exciting to me. And I really got, you know, Excel crash course more so than what I, you know, got during college. And that was the more helpful piece, is really understanding, hey, how do you look at, you mm-hmm. know, profitability, you know, on a specific product level. So that kind of helped continue to get me close to where I needed to be to understand how do we develop, the business? How do we make sure that it makes sense going forward? And then since then, I've just, relied on everything that I learned in college about how to, read a P&L, manage cash flow, balance sheet items, things like that.
So you make it back to Columbus and your dad is exploring this concept. Where do you start to go from there? Like, at what point are you at in your life? Are there kids involved? Like, just to understand kind of the, when entrepreneurs listen to this, like what level of risk you were taking at that point and how you were able to finance such a move.
Yeah, that's a great point to bring up because for me at this point, it was little to no risk. My wife and I, Lauren, we were in Chicago. She had a stable job and she was able to, when we said, hey, we're going to give this a go, we got a commitment from the bank. I was still in Chicago. And at that point, I quit my job. My dad quit his job. And then we moved back. So I was able to live, off of her for a good period of time there. And he was able to, I think get some severance and also pension kicked in at some point because that's a thing that he has. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it's my parents that have the most risk in this. So between my dad and I, we own 96% of the company. My brother-in-law and sister own another 4%. Their house is the primary collateral that we have on the loan. And that's, ultimately the thing that kind of is always in the back of my mind. Like they have worked a long time. I'm one of six, they've gotten to this point and I don't want to ruin this for them because mm-hmm. they've really gotten, they have a decent house and they're happy where they are. So for me, it was little risk other than if I don't do it now, it may never happen. And that's, I think the thing that was standing in front of me, hey, if we don't give this a go now without support of my dad working alongside him, then it might be really hard to do this in the future with kids and mm-hmm. things like that.
So walk us through that process. You decide you're going to do it, right? Your dad and you agree like, okay, we're going, we're going to do this mm-hmm. all in, and your mom. And where do you start? Does he already have kind of the brewing process and like, okay, I got this set up and we're just talking about setting up a restaurant and how we're going to market this and how we're going to distribute it? Or is it like, we got to go find a location. We got to figure out the equipment we're going to purchase, like walk us through that.
And what's the why too? Like what problem or need did you feel like you were solving within Columbus?
So at that time, I felt like the passion and the drive behind it, like the personal why was that kind of what I alluded to earlier. It's like, my dad has a similar value that I think helps push us to this place where we wanted to be responsible for something on our own. And we wanted to really have that autonomy. The why in Columbus for me felt like we didn't have what was going on in Chicago. And you mm-hmm. saw that, it was right in front of me all the time. And it's like, man, this would do well. This is a great city here. We have a really, eclectic group of people. There's a ton of diversity around the city. Like we can do something that is a little bit beyond what was typical around 2013. So talk about like brunch wasn't a thing. It was a huge thing in Chicago. Now it's big everywhere, which is great. But nobody was doing brunch when we opened. And, we saw that as an opportunity to really pair more elevated food and elevated experience with beer, which was kind of anti to the traditional brew pub model at the time. So mm-hmm. that for us was the opportunity. And then, alongside the food component, just really trying to develop some world-class beer here in Columbus.
Yeah. I think that is one thing that's kind of unique about the Columbus brewing community, right? The craft beer community is, you've got so many different experiences across each location, right? Like we had Seventh Son on recently, and then you've got, Land Grant, which is much more focused like food trucks, right? And not that nicer food experience. There's so many different places you can kind of get a little different experience at each one. And I think that's important, right? Like there is a niche there because people don't always want to go and get like the food truck food. So I'm curious about, you kind of bring this all together and you say, okay, this is what we want. Like, talk to me about finding the location. Talk to me about, how are we going to start making money, right? That's a big one. And how are we going to make sure that people know about what we're doing?
Yeah, that was, back to the kind of challenges of working with family and close relationships. Early on, my parents, they were still up in Dublin. They thought that, at least my dad did, hey, we should call it Dublin Brewing Company and do something up here. And I think not that that wouldn't have been successful or a bad idea at all. It didn't really resonate with me strongly. I wanted to see Columbus, especially the core, develop because I think that that's the thing that can tie the whole region together. The suburbs exist because of Columbus. You all are here because of the core. So how can we develop that and continue the regeneration that we've seen over the past 20 years? Well, 10 or 15 before that. That drove me to say, hey, let's look downtown. Let's really see what we can do there. So changed their minds on that, which was awesome. And my mom started to do some research on historical connections to downtown, you know, what was the history of Columbus, the city, and found that prior to Columbus being picked as the capital, it had bounced around the state a few areas until a point in which the state legislator said, hey, we need to settle on what is the capital of Columbus. And they picked the high banks of the Scioto in an area known as Wolf's Ridge. So that connection to what used to be where we are now, which is just a huge forested area with thousands of wolves roaming. We said, hey, let's do this. Let's call it that. We started to run with it. And then at that point, it was finding a location downtown. Say, okay, where could we do this? So we looked at four or five different spots at the time and landed on the location we're in now, who's owned by a guy by the name of Chris Bazunas, who started a promotional products company back in the 80s there. Moved his business up to Powell in early 2000s and it had just sit empty for a bit of time. We came along and worked something out that made sense for us. And they've been great partners, especially during the pandemic and everything that's happened around that. They've been really supportive. So that was how we landed downtown.
And what was that initial reception like, right? Like, were you immediately, right, able to get people coming in? What were the biggest challenges through that early process of actually delivering on the vision you had?
The early challenge is, I think, one, we didn't have a design budget. We didn't have any of that stuff. So this was, you know, we worked with CCAD and their group called the Mind Market Design Program. And you can go in there and work with kids and, you know, they can develop some design ideas. So we did that. They gave us some direction. Then we started to just execute on it. I mean, my dad and I, my family and I really did a lot of the labor, the finish work, built all the tables ourselves. We, you know, did some of the framing, but you know, once we got through all that, we had the space, you know, really laid out well, then it was just, okay, let's figure out operations. And we didn't have a lot of time. Obviously, money is tight when you're opening something new like this. So we did a soft opening, I think the week before we opened. It was wild. And we fixed as much as we could in the next few days, and then opened on a Friday night in late September. The initial reaction was great. You know, a lot of positive press from it. We did really well, but it wasn't until I think there was a first weekend in November that, you know, it was just, it went nuts. And it, for whatever reason, I think it was, now looking back, I know that it's related to Ohio State football, because trying to get people to go out on Saturdays in September and October are tough. but once, you know, I think it was a bye week or the season was slowing, we saw that pick up in traffic and it just went nuts from there. But yeah, the reception was great because, again, at the time we were doing something that was a little bit different than what was traditionally normally saw around the city. But we would have people call and say, hey, can I watch the game there? And it's like, no, we don't have any TVs. And they're like, what? What do you mean? Like, you're a brewery. And it's like, well, yeah, but we can do this differently. So there was a lot of those conversations where it's like, you can change the way you think about what this might look like and it'll be okay. You'll have a great time.
Yeah, kind of subverting expectations there a little bit, right?
Like, yeah.
Especially in Ohio, where, you know, most breweries I can think of, it, you know, in maybe not so much in Columbus anymore, but, you know, like in the general area, right? Like there's this kind of, when you think of a brewery, you think of a place with probably some outdoor seating, a beer garden of kind of some sort, and lots of beer, TVs, that's about it, right? Like you don't always think about that. You look like you're thinking about something over there, Josh.
I'm just curious, and you know, you think about your guys' concept and the business model. So there's maybe two questions popping in my head. I'd love to hear more about how you were thinking about this cash flow portion of the restaurant feeding the brewing division, which is, I've never analyzed a restaurant, but feels backwards to a restaurant, right? Because typically like the liquor sales will drive and the food is sometimes harder to make the money off of just with like controlling waste and supplies and everything. So maybe I'll just stop there because I'm going to ask two at once. Talk to me about that. Like, how have you guys managed that? How have you gone after making that part so profitable to drive the remainder of the business?
So, yeah, that's a great question, because the difference is that on the on-premise side of the business, so the restaurant, you know, everything gets turned over really quickly, right? Like, we're not holding on to high levels of inventory and liquor, wine, food. That stuff moves more quickly. We have a better understanding of what our daily cash flow looks like from that side of the business. It's seasonal for sure, but there's a lot of consistency. So the wholesale, the brewery operation is much more capital intensive, and it also requires, you know, 3 to 4 to 5 week lead time from brewing to when you actually get that product. So obviously that inventory that you need to build up to not only prepare to brew, but then that inventory that you're holding on after the brewing process is very different than what we do on the on-premise side of the business. So for us, and that has been, as we've scaled, a huge component of what we try to figure out operationally. How do we make sure that we're not getting too heavy on grain or hops or you know, whatever it is, and then making sure that we're turning that stuff over quickly. So the retail business has allowed us to keep a stable level of business despite the seasonality of the wholesale side, and just give us that flexibility to, you know, have the capital we need to get the grain to, you know, pay all those bills while we wait to, you know, to sell through all that product. So it's really a manufacturing business that just has a lot more needs from a capital perspective versus a restaurant, which, you know, just it turns over so much more quickly.
What about the selection of the chef and who's going to lead the menu aspects and actually, you know, cook the food on a daily basis? What was that process like?
So yeah, it was very fortuitous because I had grown up with Seth, who was our original chef. He had been with us for about 9 years, left late last year. He and I grew up together. He had worked at the Mirfield Village Golf Club and, you know, trained under some really quality chefs over there and went to the Culinary Institute of America for college. When he had just moved back to Columbus, he'd been in San Francisco for a little while when my dad and I started talking about doing this and, you know, kind of connected with him and said, hey, I've seen what you've done, you know, on the food side. Are you interested in this? And he had been a home brewer. So, you know, really just a very lucky opportunity for he and I to reconnect. And he was looking for something else because I don't know what he was doing at the time, but I think looking at another golf club. And this was something that was he was excited about, you know, building. So he and I got together and he was our first hire.
And then on the brewing side, your dad was just kind of the brewmaster leading everything behind that?
He was. He was. He initially developed the recipes. He had been a home brewer, but that was the extent of it. So we quickly realized that not only to run the business, he's going to need some support, but to figure out how do we brew on a 15-barrel system? You know, how do we scale this from a little homebrew thing to a full system? And that's when we hired, his name was Ryan. He was our initial brewer, and he was with us for a little bit, but he was splitting time between a brewery in Charleston, West Virginia, and us. So as we scaled, we said we needed somebody here, you know, full-time, and we found Chris Davison, who had been our home brewer, or excuse me, our head brewer for 7 years. Yeah, 7, 8 years.
Hey, everybody. Mike here. We're going to take a quick break to talk about one of our sponsors, One Columbus. And we are very excited to partner with One Columbus. They really, really share the same vision as us here at the Conquering Columbus podcast, which is really building up the Columbus region to be one of the most prosperous regions in the United States. And One Columbus serves as the business location resource for companies across Central Ohio and around the world as those companies grow, innovate, and compete within the global economy. And they help us lead a regional growth strategy that develops and attracts the world's most competitive companies, grows a highly adaptive workforce, and prepares our communities for the future, inspiring innovation across the board. Their mission really is just ensuring the Columbus region is a vibrant place to build businesses and careers. So again, we really appreciate all of their support. You want to learn more about them, go check out their website, columbusregion.com. That's columbusregion.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll be right back into the episode. I'm going to kind of pivot the conversation a little bit here. And what I'm curious about is like, what were the biggest surprises? Right, you kind of had this plan and, you know, it sounds like you guys knew what you were getting into and there was kind of a good idea of where things would go. What were the things that like just came out of blue, shocked you, really made you kind of pivot or rethink certain aspects of the business?
That's, I mean, I'm struggling to come up with anything other than a pandemic because that has been just the...
Yeah, well, that one surprised all of us, I think.
You know, before that, so we opened up with the restaurant. I think the biggest, you know, initial... like pivot was, hey, we've got this restaurant, it's doing real well, but we have this other space in the back. Like it's just, we're using it as, it was a place to park our cars for a little while. You know, we got to thinking, okay, well, what are we gonna do here? And, you know, my idea was like, oh, let's just turn it into a tap room. You know, this is something that we don't have a beer, a more beer focused space. Like we could just, you know, put some tables up here and make it a really cool beer hangout. And my dad, you know, it was like, well, what about all the cooler space that we're going to need for distribution? And I was like, what? I hadn't gotten my mind out of what I was doing with the restaurant side. So I hadn't been open to seeing what the other opportunities were. And, you know, he had been focused on that and was like, okay, we, you know, we really got to think about this from a different place now. So when you're starting it, you're just kind of heads down focused on the daily work. It was just a light bulb moment where I was like, oh, we have to do both now. You know, we have to start thinking about what does this look like in the next 5 years, you know, next year? And what do we need to do now to support that? Or, you know, what decisions do we need to make that are going to allow us other opportunities? So that was a big one. cash flow was a huge one. It was around that time when it was just like, we didn't have a cash flow forecasting process or anything like that at that point. And it got to a point where it was like, oh shit, I see that, you know, we might be running out of money in the next couple of days. Like, what are we doing here? And then, you know, obviously we got through that just fine, but that was a point at which we said, okay, we need to be on top of this. So that was another shift in, you know, me having some finance background, you would think that that might be something that you're on top of, but no, you're not.
Yeah.
So 10 years go by to today, and looking back on, you know, it's the brewing side, it's, I'm going to sell it locally within the restaurant, but I'm also, then I got to land retailers and I got to land distribution. And now the restaurant's growing as well. Like, have you guys thought about second locations on that side? How big are you going to grow the brewing side? Are you continuing to land wider spread and a larger geographic presence on the distribution?
And like we talked about in the intro, right? Like, you also have the new Understory location, mm-hmm. new sister location. So yeah, talk us about that expansion and where
yeah.
that's heading.
Yeah, no, 100%. So when we, just to back up a little bit, after we'd opened the tap room, the next thing we did downtown was open up our private event space. So we filled out that building. We have 20,000 square feet down there, and most of it is on-premise retail space. The brewery was producing a lot of beer out of that location for a while, but we couldn't do anymore. So we knew that we had to figure out another way in which we could grow the wholesale side of the business and scale that up. So what happened was, after looking at a lot of different opportunities over the years, we felt like we needed to figure out something that was easy to get into and not going to require us to make a huge investment, because we didn't have the ability to do that. So Four String, unfortunately, was a brewery that went under in 2018. And, you know, we had kicked around the idea sometime in 2019 of, hey, you know, that could be a space. Like, somebody reached out to us, or we reached out to them, I don't remember, but we went over and saw it, fully built out brewery, lab, you know, space for barrel storage, just a lot of warehouse space there to scale up. This ticks all the boxes, and we're not paying what we would have to do it on our own. Obviously, we're going to pay that in rent because it was built out that way, but it ticked all the boxes. So we got into that facility in late 2019. And another big piece of that was it had a canning line, which at the time we were bottling beer. Everybody was canning. That was where the market was going. We were missing out on that. So we moved into that, started getting into that space and really pumping out beer. And then the pandemic hits. Mm-hmm. So it was lucky, because now we could send all of that beer out in cans, which were, you know, again, that's where people were buying the beers, is at the grocery store, and they were buying it in cans. So having that at that moment was huge. But that's the facility that's really allowed us to scale up the wholesale side of the business. And we've moved throughout most of the state. We haven't yet gone up into Northwest Ohio, and we're really just starting to push down into Southwest. But we have a distributor up in Northeast Ohio that's pushing our beer out, 9 counties there, a distributor down in Southwest Ohio. And then we self-distribute in Central Ohio, in Dayton, and Cincinnati right now.
And talk me through the decision of self-distribution. I mean, that's obviously a rigorous process to go through and a little bit of a distraction. You typically, I would assume, try to get away from that, unless you want to keep self-distributing to the local, like, kind of niche retail markets?
So it's complicated in Ohio. So Ohio is what's known as, and I won't get too far in the weeds, but it's known as a franchise state, franchise law state. So with the distributor relationship, is once we sign that agreement, it's virtually impossible to get out of that agreement. They had put into state law to protect distributors back in the 70s, when you had like 3 breweries and hundreds of distributors from, you know, Anheuser-Busch saying, I don't like you anymore, I'm going to go to this distributor. Makes total sense. Now, not so much, when we have hundreds of breweries that are trying to develop a market presence, and distributor can just sit on them. They could, you know, say, hey, we're just not going to do anything, and you don't have a lot of recourse. So long story short, that always was in the back of our mind as, hey, I think we need to hold on to self-distribution. We are allowed to self-distribute in Ohio. Not all states allow manufacturers to do that, but we can do that. So we've held on to that. And it's been really successful for us, especially in our home market. Like, to have that connection with the customer, to be able to, you know, if they need a keg on Friday afternoon, we can get it to them. A lot of distributors are, well, your delivery day was Wednesday, I'm sorry. You know, for us, we were able to maintain and build the brand and do that successfully with that self-distribution model. But as we get further away from Central Ohio, it's been more complicated. So that's when we moved over and we started to work with distributors. And I think I do believe that you can find a good distributor and develop a partnership with them and be successful, but we've still held on to that in our home market because we do think it makes sense. The economics are good. It's not going as far, and we do have a really strong account base here. So it's worked out pretty well for us.
Yeah, and what about understory? I think we kind of skipped over that, but you know, deciding to open a new location or what is, you know, a sister company, right? Like that's a pretty big step in terms of expansion. So walk us through that. What was the concept? Why now? Why the decision, like when you expanded and what was different about it?
Yeah. So back to your question about moments in which, you know, things kind of flipped for us. That was one of them, coming out of the pandemic and, you know, my dad and I saying, okay, that was really hard. And we care deeply about what we're doing here. If we're going to make this successful and sustainable, we've got to grow it a little bit more than what it is. And that was the decision point to say, okay, let's open a new concept. You know, we've been really successful with what we've done downtown. I think we can do something else that will be successful. And then it was just, for me, the ideation period began. And I had had an experience at a place I'd visited in London that was around a canal that had this connection with water, and the vibe of the space was just amazing. It was an old brewery with a pizza place, but it just, you know, had really chill house music at night, like people drinking cask ale beers. It was just a really cool spot. So that was always, for the last few years before this, had been in my mind about something I'd want to recreate, but it just had, you know, a vibe that I wanted to develop. And the other, you know, piece of it is that downtown we're landlocked. You know, we don't have access to nature like we would really love to have. So what could we do that would give us access to nature, put us a little bit closer to a community or an area that is interesting, exciting? And the open air school was the one that popped up, and they had reached out to us back in 2018 to do something. But at the time, the idea for them, for that building, was more of a food hall. Mm-hmm. Since then, I reached back out to him. This was early 21 and said, hey, you know, where is this project? What are you guys doing with it? And Ben Kelly, who's one of the partners on that project, you know, hadn't picked anybody to fill up most of the space. He owns Emmett's Cafe, which is also in that building. So they were going to do that, but the rest of the space was kind of up for grabs. So we said, all right, we're in, you know, let's make this happen. And from then it was a push. I think I talked to 10 different banks and we got turned down by all of them, with the exception of one, who is a bank that we had worked with. Well, somebody from that bank we'd worked with in the past, and they saw the vision, you know, they saw what we could do there, and they gave us some of the funding. We were able to figure out the rest of it to get that open. And we got the event space open and later in 21 and the lounge and the commons in early 22.
And has that drastically changed your day to day?
Yeah. again, I have two kids too. So the pandemic is a very, very weird time for me. It's a blur for the most part. But what we did there, you know, pre-pandemic to now is, yes, very different. You know, we have, as I mentioned earlier, we developed a leadership team. We've got somebody that runs the on-premise business. We have somebody that runs the operations on the brewery side of things. And they're, with the teams that they have, are able to effectively handle the day-to-day, which is awesome. I can't, you know, say enough about them. They're doing amazing work. The entire team is. So that's allowed me to really keep that focus on, you know, how are we driving the business? How are we intentionally developing the culture here? You know, because that's a big thing that's changed. When it was my dad and I there, we could more easily control the culture of the business. You know, we were there, we were living the values unintentionally, but it was happening. Now, as we've grown, we have to really be much more intentional and specific about how we build the culture across three different locations and sales reps that are out throughout the state. How we do all that work is, you know, really a big focus of mine. And then also just, you know, giving our leaders the opportunity to develop, and, you know, so that they can lead their teams and be more effective in what they do. So my day-to-day is very different.
Makes a lot of sense. And so what are the goals for the future, Wolfsfords? Do you see more expansion on the horizon? Do you see this as a, hey, we want to kind of build this into a sustainable model and kind of keep it there? Like, what does that look like?
We do. I mean, I'm happy. I'm very content. I love what I do. It's awesome to be at this point and have a business that we've been able to build. But we always want to be creating more value for our employees. You know, it's a big focus for my dad and I, as we set out to do something that was a little bit more supportive of them. So there are things from that perspective that we are looking to do that require us to be a little bit bigger. So we want to contribute, you know, 401k matches. We've had short-term disability benefits that we pay 100% of. If our employees get injured outside of the job, they have something to fall back on because that's not something that's normally out there for hospitality workers. And then, you know, medical benefits, all those things. We want to do more of that. We want to continue to develop them, create a more sustainable employment model. So that requires us to scale up and continue to do that. So that's the focus. On the wholesale side, we have a ton of opportunity. We've got a lot of capacity in that facility. We can do that. So our biggest priority is getting the volume to support the cost base that we have over there. And we're not far from that, but we've been pushing to get to that point since we got into that facility in late 19. So that's one of the biggest priorities. And then the other one is that I love the idea of new and interesting concepts. You know, Understory was so much fun to develop. That was a really cool space. I want to do the more of that. Our team gets really jazzed about that. We get super, super, super excited about trying to create new and interesting experiences. But being that we are, you know, a small family business that is primarily debt financed, that's hard to do without, you know, developing the cash flow that we need to from the rest of the business. So right now, those are the biggest priorities for us.
Josh, you got anything else before we kind of head towards the wrap up here?
That's all I got.
All right. Well, Bob, it's been great talking to you. And we want to kind of pivot towards some of our last questions of the show here. So the first one, do you have any advice for our listeners? Now, many of our listeners, while they might not be entrepreneurs themselves, they're probably a little entrepreneurial minded, but they're also really interested in what's going on in Columbus. So any advice for them?
A couple things. I would say, you know, try to do the thing that gets you really excited, that gets you to want to get up in the morning, which, you know, is easy to say, and I'll add to it. Also try to reframe the things that want you to stay in bed in your mind. So one thing that I've learned, especially over the past few years, is that perspective is huge. You know, the barrier that gets in the way of us doing most of the things that we want to be doing. And I think if you can really work on exercising that meaning of the things that are kind of getting in the way of you doing something that gets you excited, it's going to be really beneficial in the long term. And I wish I would have learned that stuff when I was younger, but that's probably my biggest advice, I'd say.
It's good advice. And so Bob, our last question of the show, it's centered around the theme here on Conquering Columbus, which is live uncomfortably. So without telling you too much about why we chose that for a show about entrepreneurs, business leaders in Columbus, what do you think when you hear it? How does it apply to your life and career?
I would say, you know, when I hear that phrase, for me, it means really doing the thing that is the harder path. Mm-hmm. And it's not, you know, not to say that if there's a simple way to do something that you don't go and do that, if it's going to give you the result that you want, but to really almost seek out, you know, what am I missing if I take this simpler path? And for me, the experience that comes to mind when I think about that is there was a moment in college when there was a class that you could take in at, it was at Columbus State, and it was supposedly an easier accounting class. And all, you know, a lot of people were doing it. It was like, thought to myself, like, that's interesting. Like, should I be doing that? You know, like it's an easier thing to do. It's going to get me the same results. It's going to get me the credit that I needed and transfers, whatever. And then, you know, somebody had said, well, why are you going to school? You know, like, why are you going to Ohio State to get the education from Ohio State? Well, then, yeah, why would you go somewhere else to take that class? And for me, that was just, again, one of those light bulb moments where it says, okay, like, yeah, there's something I'm missing when you kind of seek that easier path. And often over the years when I've gone to that really hard place and confronted the fear that I might have been feeling, or, you know, the missing the opportunity of taking that because of those fears or those emotions got in the way, I've missed out, you know. So mm-hmm. I would say that's what I hear when I hear that phrase, is that, you know, it's really important to seek out what might be a more difficult path because you don't know what benefits are going to be out there when you take it.
Love it. Bob, thanks so much for coming on to talk with us. Tell your story and the story of Wolf's Fridge. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, and Conquerors, thanks so much for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed that episode, as usual. If you want to learn more about Wolf's Fridge, go to
wolfsridgebrewing.com.
Perfect. wolfsridgebrewing.com. Again, appreciate all your support. If you like this interview, you want to hear more just like it, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on whatever podcast app you are listening on. We release episodes every week. And again, we appreciate that support. We'll talk to you next week.